I think this is just a window dressing action. It's really not going to have any business effect on BP in the long run.
The EPA excludes BP from government contract work. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, November 28th. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, the Anchorage School District eliminates 100 positions.
Our goal is that no classroom teacher is reduced.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Providence Imaging Center, helping cancer patients stay in Anchorage with a PET scanner that fuses anatomical and functional images since 2004. Learn more at provimaging.com. And by Older Persons Action Group, promoting well-being for Alaska seniors and their families, including publication of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper. Membership information at 1-800-478-1059.
Just weeks after BP accepted blame for the Deepwater Horizon oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, the federal government is announcing more punishment for the company. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, the Environmental Protection Agency is suspending BP from future government contracts.
Less than 2 weeks ago, BP agreed to pay $4.5 billion and plead guilty to 11 criminal charges. The company still needs to settle the Clean Water Act violations from the spill, and that could total more than $20 billion. So today's news was just one more blow. The EPA is suspending future contracts between the company and the federal government. Ed Herz is a professor of energy economics at the University of Houston. He says the contracts between the government and company can be wide-ranging.
The arrangements that BP would have would be entering into new leaseholds with the federal government. So this would suspend BP from leasing new tracts to explore. It could extend to BP entering into contracts to supply the federal government with fuel or to provide services.
Services like transportation, refining, and consulting. But Herz says this is by no means a severe punishment.
I think this is just a window dressing action on the part of the EPA. It's really not going to have any business effect on BP in the long run.
Because, Herz says, the government will continue to honor existing contracts. And the federal government has an interest in keeping BP profitable because it wants to collect the billions of dollars in fines from the company. Still, U.S. Senator Mark Begich expressed concern that the administration is singling out the oil industry.
I think if that's the new issue of when we have criminal issues against companies, then there's a lot of companies we should be looking at. Now, if you look at the defense end, we've had companies over there running the problems, but they're not barred from business.
Neither the EPA nor BP would comment for this story. Both issued statements. The EPA blasted the company for a lack of business integrity. It says suspensions typically last up to 18 months, but can continue as long as there are ongoing legal proceedings. The announcement has not affected the value of the company yet. BP stock finished up 0.3% today. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
The Anchorage School Board discussed the district's finances over lunch at King Career Center today. Anchorage School District Superintendent Jim Browder made his first big announcement, cuts. He says ASD is eliminating 100 positions to save more than $4 million, but nobody is getting laid off. KSKA's Dacia Eaton explains.
The board has been focused on developing a long-range fiscal plan with new superintendent Jim Browder since he replaced longtime superintendent Carol Como in July. He and the board face a $25 million shortfall next school year. The layoffs, he says, will save the district more than $4 million. Browder explains his strategy.
Our goal is that no classroom teacher is reduced. Now, there's instructional support folks that would be considered classroom teachers that are on the other side, but our hope is through attrition, everybody will have a job.
The positions being eliminated include teaching assistants, tutors, and secretaries. Financial staff positions and some director-level positions are also being cut. Many of the cuts, Browder says, are based on recommendations from the Council of Great City Schools organizational audit.
We're going to deploy better more efficiently. The Council of Great City Schools said that we had more teacher assistants than any of our comparables. So we're going to step back there, get that to a manageable number, and assure that the teachers have the things and support they need.
Sharon Baker is the president of TOTEM, the union that represents non-certified education support workers, the ones that Browder says are most likely to go. She says she's happy none of her workers will lose their jobs this time around, but she says the move worries her.
Just because the position has been vacated and not filled, that doesn't mean the work's going away. The other people working are going to have to pick up the slack. So everybody's going to feel the results of these cuts.
The positions being cut became vacant in July and weren't filled, so nobody will actually be getting a pink slip. School board member Gretchen Guest said the cuts are geared toward protecting students and teachers.
If we continue the current budget process, it's very siloed and is, well, we spent this much last year, and therefore everyone look at their budget and decide how they're going to spend this year. We're not going to get to where we want to go strategically. We have to flip the budget process on its head. We need to start with who are the students in the classroom and what resources they need.
The meeting was also a chance for Browder and the board to introduce their priorities for next year's legislative session. Browder says with less federal dollars streaming into the district, ASD hopes to secure adequate state funding. East Anchorage Representative Les Guerra told the board and Browder to be ready to make a strong and honest case for funding to legislators.
I would hope that you would come down and say, this is what we need to have a vibrant school system, to make up for maybe the teacher layoffs that were caused last year or the close in summer school that was caused last year and some of the programs you've had to cut. Earlier years when I was in the legislature, school districts would ask for what they thought they could get from the legislature. And they would get that amount. It would be an inadequate amount. And then the next year, a legislator would say, we gave you what you asked for. How come performance hasn't gone up?
Browder says he and his staff will present a more detailed fiscal plan to the board in mid-December and have a final budget in the new year, when they'll also begin lobbying the legislature for funding. Browder says he'll work to deploy people and resources more efficiently to avoid overburdening employees. But a leaner workforce is the new reality for the Anchorage School District. He anticipates more cuts throughout the remainder of the year, but reiterated that he will do all he can to keep teachers off the chopping block. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
The federal Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals today reversed its decision to halt construction on the Port McKenzie rail project. The news is a disappointment to Cook Inlet Keeper Advocacy Director Bob Shavelson.
We're hoping that our politicians will recognize that this is yet another Alaska mega project, which is based on pie-in-the-sky assumptions, and there's really not a business model that's going to allow this rail spur to pay for itself. So we don't want to have another public funding disaster like the Port of Anchorage, and we don't want to impact hundreds of thousands of acres of salmon habitat in the Mat-Su Valley.
Shavelson's group and others had sued to stop construction on the rail spur from Port McKenzie to Houston, saying the project could harm wetlands and salmon habitat. The Matanuska-Susitna Borough has backed the rail project as a means to boost the area's economy. Mat-Su Borough Mayor Larry DeVilbiss.
We were prepared to not expect a decision on that until next spring and possibly even lose a whole year's construction over this. So I was delighted that this answer came very quickly. And I think the fact that it came so quickly and with the language that it did, that it spoke well to the merits of our project.
The court decision lifts the order halting work on the Alaska Railroad Extension Project. The earlier decision by a three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit last month cited serious questions as to whether the Federal Surface Transportation Board complied with federal environmental law in determining the need for the extension. State Representative Bill Thomas said yesterday that he was, quote, 99.9% sure he had asked for a recount in the race to keep his seat in the legislature. Today he made it official. The Haines Republican filed a recount request with the State Division of Elections. It's scheduled for Monday at 9 a.m. in Juneau. Sitka Democrat Jonathan Christ-Tompkins currently holds a 34-vote lead in the race, and he's received mail from the state bearing the title representative-elect on the address label. He says he'll attend the recount in person. Thomas says he'll be traveling out of town during the recount. The race for House District 34 has been back and forth since election night. Christ-Tompkins was up by 44, then down by 2, then tied with Thomas, then up by 28. The final vote count put the race at a 34-vote margin. If officially elected, Christ-Tompkins would become the youngest current member of the Alaska legislature, but not the youngest ever. That title belongs to Terry Gardner, who was elected at age 22 in 1973. Gardner became Speaker of the House at age 28. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a get-tough strategy to address Sitka's bear problem.
The problem really hasn't been resolved, and it's a people issue more than a bear issue.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for nearly 60 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. CrowleyAlaska.com. And by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
Bartlett Regional Hospital must repay the state and federal governments close to $1 million for 6 years of Medicare and Medicaid billing errors. The hospital also may have to pay penalties for violating federal law. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more.
The first public acknowledgement of the billing errors came in a memo from hospital attorney Richard Monkman to the Bartlett Board of Directors included in the packet for Tuesday's monthly board meeting. Monkman said the hospital's patient financial services director reported in April that some emergency department charges were being submitted to Medicare and Medicaid under incorrect provider names. A number of emergency room providers were not properly enrolled in the programs, so hospital staff submitted billings under the name of an enrolled provider instead. In addition, some non-physician services were billed to Medicare and Medicaid at the physician billing rate without documentation that a doctor had seen the patient. Monkman said the bad practices were immediately halted and the hospital board ordered an investigation and audit. The reviews did not find any intent to defraud or misappropriation of funds. All services were performed by licensed, credentialed healthcare providers. However, more than $648,000 in Medicare and $308,000 in Medicaid billings must be repaid. That's about 0.02% of the hospital's charges to those programs from 2006 through 2012. Monkman said the standard federal penalty in such cases is 1.5 times the amount of the billing error. Bartlett spokesman Jim Strader says the hospital has enough money to pay what it owes, plus any fines. He says the issue will not result in any price hikes or requests to the city and borough of Juneau for additional funds. Bartlett Regional Hospital is a city enterprise fund. Its board of directors is appointed by the Juneau Assembly. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
Children's brains are like sponges. They soak up languages and absorb impressions of the world, but this also means their minds retain bad experiences, like domestic violence. Prevention programs in Sitka are working with young kids to give them the tools they need to process feelings and become more resilient. In part one of a two-part series, KCAW's Anne Bryce explores programs that aim to create personal connections through group activities.
Under Alaska law, a child's exposure to violence in the home is considered a mental injury. The damage it causes can be severe and persistent, even changing the way a young brain develops.
It really reverts you back down to the more primitive parts of the brain, keeps you in that fight or flight response.
Elena Gustafson is the youth outreach coordinator at the local women's shelter, Sitkins Against Family Violence, or SAFE. She says children internalize violence in the home, whether they witness it or not.
Even if they don't see things directly, they feel that tension and they really embody it.
For nearly a decade, SAFE has been the recipient of a federal grant through the CDC to support primary prevention of intimate partner violence within the community. Gustafson runs a program at SAFE that uses art.
A lot of these art projects are, one, to identify their feelings, which is very important because they need to be able to recognize those to know how to process anger and sadness and how to really incorporate into themselves feelings of joy and pride.
For kids, Gustafson says sometimes healing is as simple as kids just saying what's important to them.
I like playing Game Boy fighting.
Okay. You like playing Game Boys. Okay. What else do you like?
These are still kids who are caring about their favorite colors, what their favorite color is, or talk about how they really like to jump rope or things like that. And we need to celebrate that.
Alaska has one of the highest domestic violence rates in the nation. Nearly half of Alaska's women have experienced intimate partner violence in their lifetime. That puts the state third, behind Oklahoma and Nevada, but well above the national average of about 36%.
Kids who have experienced trauma often tend to either be very withdrawn or very hyperactive and agitated. They really don't see how their actions are connected with the outside world to the point of, you know, causing violence to other people and not understanding that that was wrong.
But Gustafson says blaming or punishing kids for misbehaving isn't the answer.
You know, you can't just label a child a trouble kid and say, oh, there's not going to be any hope for them, right? Or like, they're just a bad kid, and so we're going to punish them. You can't do that. Often, those kids are the ones who need more positive reinforcement, more support.
We all are born good. There's not one baby in the world that we go, oh, that's a bad baby. Forget it, you know. Just write that baby off.
Brian Sparks works at SAFE as a domestic violence prevention specialist.
And somehow, 18 years later, they're not good anymore. Well, so what happened? What's messed up about the system? And so we're just trying to find out what's messed up and correct that.
Sparks coordinates a local branch of the national program called Girls on the Run. It's an after-school program for 3rd to 5th grade girls.
It's all about creating connections. We're working on establishing peer groups and creating stronger bonds between peers.
The program will be in its 5th year this spring at Keet Gushihin Elementary School.
The activity, which is going to involve running somehow, like maybe running to the other end of the gym, telling a girl something they like about that girl, and then running back, and then just doing that over and over again.
He says prevention programs are important for every person, regardless of age or gender. But there are certain benefits to starting young.
Certainly, younger girls, younger people, are more ready for some knowledge than they would be at another age. Middle school is a time where they want to listen to their peer group more than they want to listen to adults. But in third grade, the girls are really proud that they're wearing the same T-shirt as their coach. They love it. It's the best thing in the world for them. They get to talk about, you know, not gossiping. And oh, they love it. It's fantastic. But imagine that in eighth grade. No way.
The hope is that these girls will pass their knowledge along to other peers and bring it with them into adulthood.
They spread these lessons, let's say the not gossiping lesson. Well, okay, so now if somebody who's not in Girls on the Run, you know, starts to gossip, there's a critical mass of girls who have attended Girls on the Run who don't accept that behavior anymore. It's a program that I think really creates resiliency within the girls individually and also within their peer groups and within the community. It just brings people together, and that creates resiliency.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ann Bryce.
The state has awarded a contract for an emergency food supply. Anchorage-based Select Medical Products Incorporated is the recipient of a $4 million five-year contract from the Alaska Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. Agency spokesman Jeremy Zedek says it calls for maintaining enough food to feed 42,000 people for a week.
Approximately one-third of the food will be stored in the Fairbanks area and two-thirds of it in the Anchorage area. And the idea is if there was a disaster that disrupted the normal flow of food, the state could send this food out and feed the people that are in need.
Existing warehouse facilities will be used to store the food in Fairbanks and Anchorage. Zedek says the extended shelf life supply will include easy-to-prepare meals.
3 days of supplies in immediate use pouches that can be quickly, you just reconstitute it with water. And then there's 4 days worth of bulk supplies.
Zedek says the emergency cache includes baby food and culturally specific items like Alaska salmon. The contractor will be responsible for rotating the food supplies out to ensure all items remain within expiration dates. The food is part of a larger response package the state has built up in recent years, which also includes emergency water purification, communications, and power generation equipment.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Era Alaska. For more than 30 years, Era Alaska has been transporting packages across the state, business documents, medical supplies, even family pets. More details at flyera.com or talk to your local Era Alaska agent. Era Alaska, bringing Alaskans together. And by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Get a career in less than a year in nursing or QMed or professional cooking and baking. Additional programs and course information online at avtech.edu. Classes in Seward and Anchorage start in January, so enroll now. This message sponsored by Avtech.
Representatives of South Central Alaska's three major electric utility companies told an Anchorage Chamber of Commerce audience that rates could go up as much as 10% next year, although the Regulatory Commission of Alaska will have to approve any rate increase. Municipal Light and Power and Matanuska Electric Association spokesperson said the problem is linked to Cook Inlet natural gas, which is not meeting demand. But Phil Steyer with Chugach Electric Association says Chugach anticipates a rate increase due to the costs of a new power plant that Chugach is building jointly with Municipal Light and Power.
The new power plant, because of its efficiency, will use much less fuel than it takes to make power today. Basically, it'll only use about three-fourths the amount of natural gas to produce a kilowatt hour as the system averages today. That means we'll buy less gas and customers will have to pay less for fuel next year and the years thereafter than they currently are.
Although Chugach customers will pay less for fuel in future, they will be paying for the costs of building the facility. Steyer says Chugach will file a rate increase with the RCA by the end of the year. Steyer also says the focus of the chamber discussion centered on the need to ensure natural gas supplies. All the companies have anticipated gas shortfalls by storing natural gas at the 11 billion cubic foot Cook Inlet natural gas storage facility on the Kenai Peninsula, although that gas may not be enough to supply the companies through this winter. The companies may import liquid natural gas from out of state to bolster their supply. Matanuska Electric spokesman Kevin Brown says reports that MEA rates could triple in coming years are exaggerated. Brown says MEA's new generation facility, which won't be online until 2014, runs on both natural gas and diesel fuel. Brown says if there is a future gas shortage, the facility would have to switch to diesel fuel, and that would drive up costs.
In that worst-case scenario where we're operating on diesel power, it's theoretically possible that rates could triple from their current levels, in much the same way that Juneau experienced higher rates when they lost their hydroelectric facility.
Brown says MEA is to meet with state legislators next month to address concerns about natural gas shortages.
We know that we are coming up on a crisis in our natural gas supply. We are projecting a shortfall for the winter of 2014, and this takes legislative action, this takes action by the producers, and all of us working together to get this problem solved. And there's no more time to delay on this.
The combination of fuel shortages and new infrastructure costs is expected to raise rates by 2014. Sitka police could get tougher on trash under a measure advanced last night by the Assembly. City law right now says residents must wait until their designated trash pickup day before they can put smelly garbage outside. But as KCAW's Ed Ronco explains, the days of a friendly warning for violators might soon be over.
If you read the city code books, you'll see it listed as putrescible waste. You know it as those dinner scraps from three nights ago, or that tub of who knows what that you finally removed from the fridge, or even dirty diapers. Bears call it dinner. Sitka's neighborhoods are like all-night buffets for bears, and have been for a long time.
In fact, by my accounting, more than 25 years.
Phil Mooney is the area wildlife biologist for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
And the problem really hasn't been resolved, and it's a people issue more than a bear issue.
So the city wants to tighten the rules. Instead of a warning on the first offense, residents who toss out their smelly trash too early could get a $100 fine. do it again, and it goes up to $300. Police have fielded 170 bear calls this year, and Mooney says some residents have established neighborhood watch groups.
And they're looking after one another. And these people are getting very frustrated. In fact, we fielded way more calls from residents who are saying, we've got 10 people in the neighborhood, 9 people are taking care of their garbage, the bear is coming in and hitting number 10 and hitting it repeatedly, and as a result of that, the bear is coming in and knocking over the other 9 cans.
Besides giving police the ability to get tougher sooner on garbage that can attract bears, the group also hopes some projects around town will help address the problem. The Indian River neighborhood is one of the busiest places in Sitka for bear activity. That's because it's right next to a salmon-heavy river and a dense forest. The neighborhood is managed by the Baranoff Island Housing Authority, or BIHA. The organization installed 5 350-gallon dumpsters to replace individual cans for the homes along Andrew Hope Street. And in other parts of the neighborhood, it added 350-gallon cans and secured them to the ground. BIHA staff unlatched the cans on the morning of pickup. Police Chief Sheldon Schmidt says it's made a difference.
Our calls went way down there this year, and I don't know if it's a direct result of the cans, but I believe it is.
Schmidt was peppered with questions from the assembly, including how many tickets the department has written. He said about a dozen this year, but that he did not have the number right in front of him. Assemblymember Mike Reif wondered about homes and businesses downtown. Bears don't often come into Sitka's core, although it's not unheard of. But still, Reif wondered, what about people in dense neighborhoods without sheds to secure their trash cans, or commercial buildings that have cans outside?
We don't anticipate going around writing tickets for all those.
Right.
We've been reactive in nature. We get a call of a bear in a neighborhood. We see that he's been attracted by garbage. So that's when we're actively looking to do enforcement, education and enforcement.
Gotcha.
The changes to the trash ordinance will require another reading before the assembly. They would go into effect 30 days after getting final approval. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
Finally tonight, a correction. Last night in a story about Governor Sean Parnell's announcement of a Chinook salmon research initiative, we incorrectly identified East Side set netter Lisa Gabriel as Linda Gabriel. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org or follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dacia Eaton in Anchorage, Ed Ronco and Dan Bryce in Sitka, Casey Kelly in Juneau, and Dan Bras in Fairbanks. APRN's Peter Granitz reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. Winter in Alaska can be tough on children and adults with asthma. Cold air and smoke from wood stoves is hard on the lungs. More time is spent indoors with dust, and colds and flus are common. Take care of yourself and loved ones with asthma during these colder months. Get a flu shot. Talk to your health care provider about asthma management. Take daily medication and know what can make asthma worse. For more information, visit asthmainalaska.org or call 1-800-LUNG-USA. This message sponsored by the American Lung Association.
Increasing energy efficiency is an easy way to reduce energy consumption and save money. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation now offers financing to publicly owned facilities to make improvements to increase energy efficiency. Find out more about how their loan program works and if there are public buildings in your community that are a good fit for the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Program at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by AHFC.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.